Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mud Toe at Midnight, and I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me this evening. You are listening to the Blog Talk. Well, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. You're also listening to the With Insights channel of Blog Talk Radio. You can catch some other shows on this channel at different times of the week. Iggy and Rosa have their intuitive readings hour. I think it's still an hour, Mondays at 6 p.m. And then Jenny Seek has her inner voice intuitive hour. And I think they're both hours. I'm the only one who doesn't have an hour. I'm going to have to speak to somebody about this. Jenny Seek's show is Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And then Heather Capia's show, it's an entrepreneurial excellence hour, is Wednesdays, I believe, at 3 p.m. I really am going to have to check that schedule, make sure I've got those times right. But you could check, if you wanted to, the Blog Talk Radio, the With Insights channel, and it will tell you all you want to know about those shows and mine. Mud Toe Sasquatch on Mud Toe at Midnight. Although my bio on that channel, information, what you call it, page, I guess. That's a very difficult word for me to remember. Page. That bio is a bit dated. I've asked Iggy to change that a number of times, and he has not gotten around to that, so I am going to have to bug him about that again, I think, although he has just only recently returned from Great Council in Missouri, where he's come back with all sorts of great information about our Nemenha. We can't call it a tribe, we can't call it a clan, I can't remember what it is we actually call it now. We are part of the Native American Church here in the United States. We are an adopted Native American discipline, I guess, would be a good word. We don't claim a connection to the First Peoples. We are adopted into the Native American Church and are proud and happy to be there. We are white Europeans who identify with and resonate with the beliefs of the First People. And that's where we come from. I am a shaman in that discipline. Shaman can mean a lot of different things. The traditional shaman is, or I guess the most well-known type of shaman, is the medicine man, the one that heals people's ills and also gives advice. I guess all shamans really kind of give advice in one way or another. My particular modality is the written and spoken word. I am a device of the spirit, you might say. And I say this in all humility. I don't say this. I'm a device of the spirit, so you should listen to me. I receive words that I don't always know why I'm receiving them or who it is that needs to hear them, but I know that somebody does. So I am called to be a writer and a speaker of those words, those things that come to me, both as I'm speaking to you now and also when I'm sitting at home in front of my typewriter. So I am called to share these words, although I may not know exactly how or why I'm supposed to be saying them or who is supposed to be hearing them. I need to speak, and I need to make my words known in whatever ways I can figure out to do it. So that's why I'm here this evening. And if you're a first-time listener and you feel that this program is mostly my ramblings about what's going on in my life, you would be right. That's what I usually end up talking about, unless something kind of special comes up that I want to tell you. Maybe about things that happened to me during the week, or sometimes it just occurs to me, maybe this is the way things should be, or maybe this is the way things are but need to be rethought. And I'll share those, or I'll share those in my blog, which is published on my website, mudtoesasquatch.com, every Monday. You will see a lot of those kind of things there, and also samples of my writing. What ends up on this radio show, because I found that it seems to work better, is just whatever is immediately in my head on this, on the Friday evenings, because I found if I try to plan the show in any way, Or let's say I tried for a while, I tried to meditate, you know, trying to find some time to meditate, you know, be meditating like a half an hour before the show. And then write down some things that came up in my meditation and then talk about that on the show. While I was doing approaching the show that way, it seemed not to work. And I'm not sure, you know, I don't get a whole lot of feedback about the show, so I don't know really one way or the other what people out there may be thinking. But I know what I was thinking was, this just doesn't seem like it's working. It doesn't seem like it's what I ought to be doing. What feels better is just talking about the things that happened to me and maybe riffing off of that. The show never really comes out the way I think it's going to. And I anticipate, I know I'm going to do the show, I anticipate, you know, what things might come up, but it seems like the thing that is a small thing that maybe, you know, I'll throw in at the end if I have time, ends up being the thing that dominates the show. Like, for instance, if I decide to talk about why I do the show, and it ends up being I spend a half an hour talking about it. I guess the thing, I guess the takeaway from this, I can't tell you what the takeaway is. I can tell you what mine would be. I don't know what your takeaway is. You have your own takeaway. My takeaway is that these are words that you take what you want and leave the rest. You know, take what seems applicable to be to you. If that's nothing, then it's nothing. If it's one or two words, then it's one or two words. If it's something I said but it seems to apply to you in a completely different way, that's fine too. Have it the way you want it. This evening I'm broadcasting to you live from a parking lot, which happens quite a bit during this time of the year. Again, for first-time listeners, one of my odd jobs is that I film high school football games, and I don't always make it all the way home before I have to do this show at midnight. I'm pretty close to home right now. I probably could have made it home, but I was hungry. I didn't have a chance to eat before I had to go. I had a job in the afternoon. Actually, it's one of the standardized patient jobs where I'm, you know, pretending to be. Actually, in this case, I wasn't pretending to be someone who was sick. I was pretending to be the son of someone who was sick, and we were trying to figure out, you know, whether we're going to pull the plug or not. And I got to be the guy. I was the oldest son, and I thought that we should pull the plug. So I got to be the incredible words I want to say that I can't say, I shouldn't say. I don't know. Is there really any? I've never been told there are certain words I'm not supposed to say on the show. I don't want to be patently offensive, but I could say I got to be the stubborn guy, you know, who everybody gets to hate because I'm the one who wants the outcome that everybody else doesn't want. Although I didn't really want that outcome, it's just I thought it was the most the character I was in. I thought it was the most practical way to proceed. That everybody else was being very sentimental, and the fact was that my father, this is my fictional father, not my real father. But my fictional father just, you know, that wasn't going to come back, and there wasn't. I didn't want to prolong his sort of pain. So that was the afternoon. See, what usually happens with on football Fridays is I clear the whole day. You know, my main job, my full-time job, I don't have a shift on Fridays. And you know, on football Fridays, I try to just clear everything else off my schedule. So all I have to worry about is, you know, getting to that game. And I try to leave very, very early because it is, if you let it go until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it is just extremely, extremely difficult to get around in my city here. I think I've said this on the show before. I know I've said it lots of times before. Any sort of serenity that I've managed to absorb in my lifetime is just gone whenever I drive a car. So, you know, I don't like being on the road during those sort of times. You know, very, very, it's bad enough when it's an easy time on the road. When it's a very, very difficult time, you know, lots of people, it's all packed in and going very slowly and the clock is ticking. I need to be someplace at a certain time. Just not the way I like to approach it. So I usually try and get out of town around lunchtime, and I drive to wherever it is I'm going to drive, and I just spend, you know, the rest of the day there. I find something. Sometimes I even get ambitious enough to do a little bit of research and find something, you know, in the town that maybe I'd like to see, a museum or an attraction of some kind, and I just make a day of it, you know, and I go out and I go and film a football game and I come home. But see, today, it wasn't an option because I had to do this other job until about 4:30. So I was hitting the road at just exactly the wrong time. And my goodness, every major artery of transportation in my city, every big road, just say it the way it is. It's a big road, not a major artery of transportation. It's a big road. Every big road in my town has some construction going on it. So, you know, 1.6 million cars hitting the road at between 4 and 6 o'clock, and every major road, no matter which direction you're going, at some point has some place where it's going down to one lane. And so you can imagine it's just a mess. It's a total mess. And I was trying to navigate my way through that, knowing that I had to be at a certain place out of town. The game starts at 7, but, you know, I got to be there before that. I got to go there, you know, my camera set up and whatnot. So it took me the better part of half an hour. So it's 5 o'clock by the time I get all the way around the Outer Belt and to Interstate 71, which is the road that I needed. And once that was done, I figured, oh, finally I'm here. You know, I'm off the Outer Belt and all that. It just stayed slow, and it stayed slow, and it stayed slow. We were 20 miles out of town before it really started to loosen up. And I made it by about, I think I made it with 18 minutes to spare, which, you know, was enough time for me to get set up and have everything ready properly. But, boy, it was difficult to concentrate after that, you know, having run that sort of gauntlet almost. And it's, I'm like, why? I'm thinking, why do I punish myself like this? Because, you know, the first job, the standardized patient job, I really enjoy that job. And, in fact, it pays pretty well. But, you know, I was only getting paid for 2 hours a day, so that's like $28, let's say $25 or $24 after taxes. And, you know, to get that money, you know, I put myself through this hell of putting, you know, there's 2.5 hours on the road. You're thinking, am I going to get there or not? Because if I don't get, you know, the tape of the full game, I don't get paid for that. It all came out all right. But I still get, you know, the hands kind of shake even thinking about it. And I don't think the film I did tonight was top quality, just because I was still distracted. I couldn't get focused on exactly what it was I was supposed to do. And it got me thinking, and this is some of that high tone talk I was thinking of earlier. One of those bigger kind of concepts. I mean, why this seems to be the life, maybe not the preferred life, but a life that most regular people, I guess, don't seem to have a lot of trouble with. And I kind of do. And I feel bad that I feel bad. You know, you get that sort of, there's that mother voice in me that's saying, oh, you know, you should be happy with what you have because so many people have so much less. And that's true. That's very true. But I can't interrupt myself here. I'm in this parking lot, and this taxi cab just went by me that's painted just like one of our city police vehicles. I'm not exactly certain what the purpose of that would be, but now he's going through the Raising Cane's drive-thru. That's why that distracted me. So what was I talking about before? Oh, dear. It was about jobs and being satisfied with what you have. And, you know, the situation has settled down. You know, at one point I was running between 5 different part-time jobs. Now I have one job of the 5 that's sort of taken over, has given me most of my hours. And one of the jobs is gone completely. Another of them, this high school football thing, will be gone at the end of high school football season. And the other two are both standardized patient jobs that, you know, I've sort of dialed down because I'm getting more hours from my main job. So that, from that point of view, the job situation has settled down. And I'm very steadily getting 40 hours a week or more. If that continues for another few months, I will have some benefits I can talk about. There's health benefits and sick time and vacation time and all that could potentially come with this. I just don't know that I'm going to be around long enough to enjoy anything other than potentially the health care. Of course, I could sign up for the new so-called Obamacare in the next few days, although I don't really know what that entails. I have heard that the price tag is $328 a month, which I really don't have. So much for that. And that's just another element to this thing about, well, be satisfied with what you have. Well, how many people? I think maybe the reason that so many people don't have health care and so many people don't have proper retirement benefits and so many people don't make a living wage is that so many people are just happy with what they have. Why should an employer dole out more than they have to get people on their payrolls? It's something I think about because, you know, on one hand, I'm doing okay with this new job, but it's not, as I said, it's not a long-term solution. I have to look for something else. And I have to release my guilt over looking for something else because I'm certain within myself that this is not something that would sustain me, probably wouldn't sustain me physically, certainly won't sustain me spiritually through the rest of my life. You know, I don't look for myself coming out of this job and in 19 years applying for Social Security, presuming Social Security is still here 19 years from now. So what is it? See, that's the big question. What is it that I could see myself doing for a long time? And, of course, the knee-jerk reaction is writing, except when I have the opportunity to write, I don't seem to do it. So there seems to be a block there that would need to be worked on. It would be great to be doing the kind of thing that I was doing before at the university, managing technology for people and teaching them how to use it, to work in something that had in that kind of connection. Maybe not teaching formally, but being more or less a mentor in that kind of way and managing equipment and things and, you know, putting things together and putting people together with things. Are strengths of mine, which aren't being used at all in the, you know, I'm, I hate to use the term, but I'm a babysitter. You know, I'm the guys come home, I make their dinner, I give them their meds, and that's pretty much the extent of what I do. I'm just there in case something happens. I'm there in case something goes wrong, and I'm there to make sure all the proper papers are filled out. And while that's certainly a necessary job, it does not put me to the fullest possible use, as Hal the computer in 2001 said. He was putting himself to the fullest possible use, which was all any conscious entity could hope to do. And so emulating the words of Hal, but not his actions. Hal was a bad boy. He killed people. He killed, I read, I should really confirm these things. I never been and actually did this, but Hal the computer, it was couched this way. There are more on-screen murders in the movie 2001 than are in Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie and Clyde has always been talked about how, you know, what a violent movie that is. It says that there's the ape that gets killed at the beginning, and then Hal knocks off just about all the people on the spaceship except for Keir Dulay. So he's a killer. He's a mad dog, Hal is. Now I got to bring myself back. I'm phenomenally tired tonight. It was a very long day. I may have to turn around and go back to work tomorrow. That's the other thing about it. It's not a difficult job, but there's just so much of it, it astonishes me that I used to do this. For years, I did a 40-hour week job and didn't even think about it. Now it's just it's wasting me to have to go out to a place. Of course, there's driving involved. Looking back on my old 40-hour week jobs, probably not as much driving. And when I was driving, I was living in smaller towns, so it wasn't the kind of driving that I have to do here in the city. And no midnight shifts. I do an afternoon midnight double, which is loads of fun. And then another midnight, and then another afternoon. And then when I work, I have to work every other weekend, and those are afternoons. But boy, it's hard to force myself out of my apartment on the weekends. I'm so used to that being my time. Well, now only half of them are my time. And since my job at the theater went by the wayside, then I was working every weekend, and that was that. I said, "Oh, this isn't going to last. I have to do something about this." And thankfully, my boss there at the theater did something about it for me. I went through that the last show. But anyway, so what should work look like? I don't know that I've ever talked about on the show. I'm not sure that I've ever written about it. It seems to me at one time back in the distant past when I was doing my blog on Facebook, I wrote something about this. But I just think of the way we view your work and the employer-employee relationship is just something that doesn't work. It's kind of like traffic. You know, there's odd and arbitrary rules, and there's pinch points everywhere, and things don't get done, and things don't move. It's just, you know, you put too much, you overload the system as systems get bigger and bigger and bigger, as companies get larger and larger and larger. It can't help but stray from the company's original intention. I think intention is very important. It's very important to an individual's life. I think it's very important to an institution's existence. You know, what is our intention? And I think the word vision is used sometimes. It's our vision statement, and always something very flowery is concocted. But I don't think that it often addresses the issue. What exactly is it that we're here to do, and how are we going to do it in some rudimentary fashion? I think, you know, when you get to the size of Microsoft or GM or Apple or any of these huge behemoths, an organization can't help but lose a sight of the original intention for which it was founded if the organization is so large that people don't have day-to-day contact with each other. You know, they're spread all over the world, and they don't know each other. I know I used to back in my industry days, call on a steel company that was just huge, just buildings and, you know, driving around, and like it was like a small city. And I thought, my God, two people could work here, you know, their whole working lives. You know, they could never meet each other. You know, it was unless it was at a company picnic or something. So where was I going with that? Oh, I think that there's probably a size at which the company starts to sort of break down in that way. I have no way of knowing what that size is, and it's probably different for different industries. But I would say, in general, when you're getting to the point where there are lots of people in the company that you don't see or talk to on a day-to-day basis, the organization you're involved with has become too large. And what needs to happen at that point is that it needs to split up. That, you know, some of the people need to take that, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, and take it someplace else, and not stay, you know, strictly connected. I mean, you could still talk to each other for advice and stuff like that, but it's not going to be where, you know, base plant owns plant number two and has to do whatever they say, because then you haven't accomplished anything. You're still working with or for people who you don't see every day. I think something else that would need to happen is just a let's get real grandiose now. Let's talk about just abolishing the employee-employer relationship. I mean, I've said, and people have shaken their heads, I don't see a good reason why a CEO makes more than other people at the company do. What is it that makes that position, what is it that makes executive more important to the company? I would think it would be the other way around. The people who actually turn the knobs, or even better, people who are craftsmen who actually make things and build things, are somehow are less than the people who make the decisions. And I just don't understand that at all. I never have. To me, the perfect organization is one where everyone would earn their subsistence and a percentage of the profits. And from my point of view, I would think those percentages ought to be equal splits. Now, I wouldn't impose that on anybody else if they think that there are more important people in the organization that they should be making more money. I'm not gonna be the dictator of the world and tell them they can't do that. So I look at small organizations that are funded by people who have made it, quote unquote, people who control large amounts of capital, because they're always going to be those people. And I'm not knocking it. I'm not saying that everyone should have the same amount. There will always be very successful people. But that those successful people, in my humble opinion, ought to give back and fund new and existing enterprises strictly expecting they're going to get their money back. See, that's what happens now, especially if it's a bank doing the loaning, they expect they're going to get their money back. If you're taking a big risk, you'll say something like venture capital, and you can afford, so say you could afford to lose the money. I have little patience with someone who has $100 million and is afraid they're going to go down to $99.5 million. You've done well. We're not asking you to give, to make yourself poor again, but take some part of your earnings. And I wanted to fancy your word in part, but I couldn't think of one. Portion, maybe, I don't know. It's part of the earnings to go to help support new businesses that are coming along. And, at some point you might get paid back for that, if that business is very successful. It could be previously arranged, or they could just maybe say, look, for helping us out, we vote that 20% of our profit will go to this person who gave us the money to get started. And you say, and then the wealthy person would say, thank you very much. And, of course, we'll take that money and invest it in something else. Really invest it. See, we don't invest it. We talk about money being invested today, but that money isn't really invested because the person who's putting it out there expects to get it back. Obviously, you couldn't – I'm going to take that back because I'm saying the portion that you're investing, you're doing that service for the economy – is putting the money into these new businesses that are coming along. And that's the service. It's not the expectation that money is always going to come back to you. It was originally, quote unquote, yours, I think is unreasonable, a big part of the problem. And I've managed to talk myself through my entire half hour once again. I never know how. I'm starting out the show, I was thinking there's no way I'm going to run out of words before. But I never seem to run out of words before the end. And thank you, Spirit, for keeping me, what's the word, lugubrious, I guess, is a word that maybe I can use. Oh, I am so tired. I got a few miles to drive to get home, and then I'm just going to write this one in, get some sleep, get up early in the morning, and start downloading my football video and getting ready to go to work at 4 o'clock. Oh, joy. But I can always look forward to talking to you guys again next weekend, and I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks for listening, and I will talk to you soon. Bye now.